This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Coming up, you'll get stuff from De'Eriq King, Bronco Mendenhall, Justin Fuente, all ahead in the hour, and a feature on Kenny Pickett. 9 o'clock, Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic's going to join us. It's been an interesting 9 days in college athletics. We're going to talk to her about the good work that went into a year ago to get us back to playing and get us back to sports. And now, with some of maybe the loss of confidence and trust in this, it'd be interesting to see kind of maybe moving forward if we can get things done across the board in the Power Five. We'll visit with Nicole about that. And then Matt Brown will join us. He crafts a newsletter every day called Extra Points. It's got a fascinating deep dive into the business of college athletics, and it felt like a good time to bring Matt with us to this program to kind of talk about all the things that are colliding at one time here in college athletics. But that's all in the 9 o'clock hour. We're going to start the 8 o'clock hour with kind of a deep dive on the Coastal. And, well, you know what the Coastal means. Chaos, right? Because in the last 7 years, every team in the Coastal Division has managed to find the ACC championship game. And there were those being funny last week in Charlotte saying, well, in 20, Notre Dame kind of won the Coastal. Yeah, that's true. Maybe, if there'd been a Coastal. Notre Dame won it. Notre Dame was the second team in with Clemson. It ended up being 8 teams in 8 years, if you wanted to, for the moment, put Notre Dame in quotes in the Coastal Division of the ACC. So without a two-division format last year, we're now back to, okay, well, who repeats for the first time in 7 years? Can Virginia do it again? You see Pittsburgh, Miami, Virginia Tech, Carolina, Georgia Tech, and Duke dating all the way back to 2013. What does that mean? Well, we're getting ready to find out because last night on the huddle, Jordan Cornette, Eric McClain, Mark Rick shared their thoughts on Coastal chaos.
We kind of went through that in my time at Clemson, and really that 2015 season was the first kind of year of that where it's like, okay, we've been ranked the number one team for this entire college football playoff. We kind of know how this feels going into this thing. And ever since then, you know, Clemson has kind of had that mentality. So it's almost expecting it from yourself if you're North Carolina saying, okay, we're ready for this moment. We put in the work. We put in the time. You just heard from Sam and Coach just say, look, this has been the hardest this team has ever worked this off season. So Jordan, it sounds like they're primed and ready to become, you know, kind of the elusive hunted team in the Tar Heels.
Coach, how good can this Pitt offense be?
I think they could be outstanding. Over 90% of their offense is back. Got a lot of skilled players coming back. You got Addison, the young freshman sensation from a year ago. You got Jacques Louis, you got Taysir Mack. And you got guys that could go, guys that can make plays. And they're good conceptually with what they do in the passing game. He's a very accurate passer. He can stand in there and take punishment and let the ball loose. When he's holding the ball for the last second, he can move and create space and time to complete other balls down the field. And he can cross the line of scrimmage to get first downs and touchdowns. So I think he's a complete quarterback. I agree with Coach Narduzzi. I think he's going to be a great pro. And it's going to be fun to watch him play, which I think will be his last year, unless somehow they have a super senior, super seniors here pretty quick. So it'll be fun to watch him.
I've got to be honest. When I coming into this preview show, I expected to be talking about Hinton Hooker at the quarterback position for the Hokies. But he, like a few other guys, have elected to go elsewhere. He is now enrolled at Tennessee, hoping to get time there at the quarterback position, which takes us back to Braxton Burmeister. 3-1 as a starter. Pretty small sample size. Wasn't stretched too much last year. What are legitimate expectations for him in this season?
Well, the longer you're in the system, the more you understand what you're doing. The more you have a chance to play the way you need to play. Half of the job of the quarterback is to get you into out of a bad play into a good play, a change of protection that is doomed for failure. And then all of a sudden, you start making those decisions pre-snap to get your team in the best position. And then, you know, do you have the ability to carry it out by delivering the mail? And I think he could do that. I think, you know, the more you work in a system, the better chance you have of being great at it. And he's got the experience now. So I think we'll see even better things from him this year.
they go back to back, it feels like a lot of it falls on the shoulders of that lefty quarterback, Eric, and Brennan Armstrong.
Absolutely, Jordan. And it's so funny that, people are kind of questioning Armstrong's abilities. And you talk about all this preseason, no real hype around him. I think he has the capability to really be an outstanding quarterback for Virginia. He can do it all with his legs, with his arms. And they're just a different team when he's out there at the quarterback position. They win. They're more dominant. And again, they just have that swagger when he's out on the field. So I'm very excited to see this guy. I cannot wait to see, again, the full package, another year, hopefully cutting down on the turnovers and some efficiency problems. But they're going to be ready to go with Brennan Armstrong.
When you look at the quarterback position for the Miami Hurricanes, the last few decades, you haven't been able to say he was the guy as a signal caller. Insert right. De'Eriq King. Where does he rank currently, and what can a special year this season do for his legacy?
Well, I mean, his legacy is, you know, you got to win championships to have a true legacy, to be remembered for a long time. And that's what needs to happen. And if somehow Miami can win the division and then go and knock off Clemson, then you're talking about a huge legacy. If you just win the division, you know, they'll say, hey, he was really good and he was great for Miami. But you got to win the conference championship to really be remembered for a long time.
Let's take a look at this Miami schedule and what is in front of De'Eriq King. And looking at the schedule, Alabama obviously jumps out on September 4th, that one on ABC. That'll be a big time statement for the U and might get people talking about the U is back, the U is back, if they can pull that one off versus Bama. But I'm being told, Coach, ever the selfless guy you are, you'd like to apologize to Coach Manny Diaz for Alabama being on the schedule week one. Why is that?
Well, here's how it works. You get the AD and usually the deputy, the assistant AD to come talk about scheduling. Hey, you want to play Alabama about 6 years from now? Well, let's think. I'll be 6 years in the program. By then, we'll be ready for those boys. Scheduling. And if I'm not here, I'll leave it up to the next guy. Manny just happened to be the next guy. And so nothing personal. It could either be the best of days or the worst of days. But it's a great opportunity to see where Miami is, that's for sure.
I love the story about Mark Richt agreeing to the Alabama game when he first got to Miami thinking, oh, in 6 years, I'll be ready for that game. And now it's Manny Diaz's plate to deal with on that opening weekend of college football season, September 4th at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in downtown Atlanta as part of the Chick-fil-A kickoff classic. Here's what FBI thinks, by the way, the Football Power Index folks in Bristol about the Coastal. And they've got Miami at 47%. Carolina second, Virginia Tech, Pittsburgh, and Virginia kind of round out the top five in the Coastal Division with chances to win. We talk about Virginia Tech and Carolina, and we mentioned it in hour number one today. It is a headline game. There is no getting around that Friday night in Blacksburg at Lane Stadium. And when the first notes of Enter Sandman are hit, I'm sure shoulder to shoulder, the Commonwealth will be up and ready to ride with Justin Fuente's team against Mack Brown's Tar Heels as Sam Howell begins his junior campaign. But the Huddle guys broke down the Heels and Hokies last night as part of the preview show.
We'll find out how North Carolina deals with those expectations almost immediately. Because, Coach, when you look at the schedules as it's presented in front of us, you look at that game in Blacksburg that can really tell the story for UNC and even this conference.
Yeah, it's big. It's huge. It's the most meaningful game in the league, even though there's some wonderful ACC-SEC matchups everybody's going to want to be talking about and get excited about. But when it comes to league play, it's one of the few conference games of two really great teams that have a chance to win their side of the division. So they're going to be at Blacksburg. They are going to be breaking in new players at North Carolina. So I think this may be the stiffest test they have all season long, playing with that crowd noise for the first time in a long time, and just seeing how they handle that.
Coach, that crowd noise is going to be bumping. They're going to be excited. I cannot
be real.
wait to watch that game. It's going to be a lot of fun, and you talk about just the momentum swings, the excitement that you can get from having fans. That's going to be big time. But I'll tell you one thing that Virginia Tech has struggled with has been their defensive consistency. So it might not be that big of a test in terms of these guys getting the ball out, getting out quickly, and again, getting it into their playmakers' hands for North Carolina. Virginia Tech, though, a great offensive line. Seemed like they're really excited about their quarterback and Burmeister coming back and being fully ready. And then David Hale saying it's the number one wide receiver threat in the ACC. Carolina's going to have their hands ready on defense.
35 days is all we've got before we get to Carolina and Virginia Tech on Friday night, September the 3rd at Lane Stadium in Blacksburg. Don't forget, as the basketball season kind of wrapped up last night with the NBA draft, there were a pretty good night for the ACC, it turned out to be. And there's news trickling out this morning about guys who maybe were not drafted that have now signed as well. But here's a look at the seven guys that were taken in the two rounds last night of the NBA draft on ESPN and ABC. Scotty Barnes went fourth overall to Toronto. Trey Murphy to Memphis, expected to be at New Orleans by the end of the day. Jalen Johnson, the 20th pick to the Atlanta Hawks. And then Dayron Sharp was the last first-round pick. The big man from Carolina went to Phoenix, but is expected to be a Brooklyn Net. You see David Johnson, Balsa Koprivica, and Raekwon Gray, all second-round selections last night. Three draft picks in the first round in each of the last 13 drafts for the ACC and 33 straight years with a first-round pick in the Atlantic Coast Conference. The news trickling out late last night and into this morning, though, about guys who have now agreed to free agent deals with respective teams. And the headline is the first team All-ACC pick, Justin Champagne, who has signed a deal with the Toronto Raptors, sources telling Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN this morning. So Justin Champagne will go to Toronto, where he'll be a teammate, at least for the time being, with Scotty Barnes. The other guy who has also signed a deal this morning, Carleek Jones, has apparently inked a deal as well. He's agreed to terms with the Dallas Mavericks, according to Woj. So that puts the young man who was the Big South Player of the Year at Radford, who played the transfer season, the grad year, if you will, at Louisville, in a spot to join the Dallas Mavericks. The third guy to take a look at, and this is one that we were kind of keeping an eye on because he decided to stay in the draft, did not get selected in the two rounds last night, and that was Jose Alvarado of Georgia Tech. Apparently, it became very close as to whether Alvarado would return to Atlanta or not. He has signed a two-way contract with the New Orleans Pelicans this morning, according to Ken Segura of the AJC. And then the one just coming down here in the last half hour this morning was a veteran guy who was a great leader at Clemson and a tremendous player, defensive player, and a great guy to be with Brad Brownell's program, and that is Amir Sims. And Amir Sims has, according to Woj, agreed to a deal with the New York Knicks. So that will get him into summer league play with the New York Knicks coming up in Vegas starting next week. And also Sam Hauser of Virginia here has also agreed to terms with the Boston Celtics. So yet another ACC player this morning, Shams Charania, tweeting out, it's a two-way contract with the Boston Celtics. So Sam Hauser, Amir Sims, Jose Alvarado, Carleek Jones, Justin Champagne, all agreeing to terms as free agents this morning out of the ACC.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
What does De'Aaron King announcing that he is going to come back do for Miami and this conference?
Having De'Aaron King back changes everything.
Historically, when Miami's got a really good quarterback, Miami competes for championships.
There's certainly a buzz that he brings to this team. I almost feel like I'm starting to see the Miami I remember.
He's just contagious in terms of his leadership. He's a workaholic, a gym rat that's always working on his game.
King rolls out, looks downfield, caught, touchdown. De'Aaron King showing you
what all the fuss was about.
He's the biggest impact they've had at quarterback probably since Ken Dorsey.
I love this team. I'm so glad I came here. I love the University of Miami. I just want to do everything I can, everything we can as a team to finish on right foot.
So De'Aaron King's coming back. ACL rehab and all the conditioning back in place. Last week in Charlotte looked great. It was great to see him and to talk with him. But also important to remember, he's got a pretty good team around him as well. But he certainly makes them better, no question about that. And when you look at Miami, remember, as we showed you in hour one, they are a prohibitive favorite, according to FPI and our friends in Bristol. 47% is the rate by which they think the Canes can win the Coastal Division of the ACC. Now, also, doesn't hurt that most of that offensive line is back as well. But when we started our visit with QB1 last Wednesday, it really kind of centered around what he learned in the spring, not being able to play, watching football in a different way. And what was his biggest takeaway from watching his team during the offseason while he was getting back to full speed?
Me not being able to play the game, not being out there with my guys every single day working out and, you know, practicing with those guys, it kind of opened my eyes. Like, man, it's not here forever. We need to take advantage of the opportunity that you have. So that's why I tried to work really hard coming back from my ACL and trying to get back out there as quickly as possible.
You know, the other thing that was completely relevant and evident last year was your ability to connect that football team.
Yeah.
Coach Diaz was on the set with Coach Richt and Jordan earlier. And he talked about just the unique skill set you have to be a non-rah-rah guy in that locker room, but yet everybody in that locker room is in your corner.
Yeah.
Take me through that process, because, you know, you go from a place like Houston to Miami, everybody celebrates it, but you still got to connect with those guys.
Yeah.
Why is that so important for you, and what is it that you do that does that, dear?
Yeah, I think that was the most important thing for me when I first transferred there, was to, you know, win the guys over, right? So instead of, you know, talking about football all the time, I like to ask about, you know, people's personal life, like how they grew up, how many siblings they have, or they live with both parents, you know, things are going on off the field. Because I think everything that happens on the field, it comes from your connection and your trust within your teammates. So I want to learn about, you know, your mom, your dad, your grandmother, where you're from. Like, I want to learn about everything like that to make us that much better on the field. So
That's a great point, because I think those bonds are certainly deepened into a new level when you take the time to invest in the people that are around you. You know these players very well, and you've been a part of other programs as well. What is it about this Miami program that people don't know? The fun side, everything.
Yeah.
You know, we see the turnover chains and the touchdown rings and all of that. What's it like to be a part of this program?
Man, it's great. You know, it's a lot of different personalities on the team, right? You got South Florida guys, you got Texas guys, you got guys from Georgia. And, you know, we all mesh pretty good. And I think, like, Codillas used his word a lot last year, was being connected. And I truly believe that, like, we're a connected team. We're like, you know, I want to go out there and play well for Bubba Bowden. He want to go out there and play well for Mike Harley. Like, we all, like, really love each other. And every single on the weekends, Friday night, Saturday night, like, we're all together. Like, wherever one's at, we're all at. So I think that's really important to building a really good team.
All right, the other momentum piece that clearly was established in the spring was the arrival of Charleston Rambo.
Yep.
I mean, Mike Harley and Will Mallory got to be thrilled to have a guy that can take the top off of. But what is it about Rambo? I mean, he's kind of in the same situation you were in a year ago.
Yep.
He's coming in, connecting to a team, trying to find his lane, right?
Yeah, I think Rambo is a good example of what you do when you transfer. So he came in the program, didn't say much, right? He just worked really hard, and he tried to earn the respect of his teammates before he came in there, you know, talking a lot and doing all that. So, I mean, he had a really good spring. I'm excited to play with him, and he's also played in the big-time program, you know, playing in Oklahoma, and, you know, playing in big games like that can help us out in experience for him. So I think it's good.
Derek, who are some of the young guys that have really impressed you this offseason? You've probably gotten a different perspective more than ever, getting to watch more at the beginning. Is there anyone that has really stood out that maybe people aren't talking about yet?
Yeah, I can name a couple. So Jared Harrison Hunt, defense tackle, Xavier Bashepro, and Keyshawn Smith. All three of those guys had a really good spring and having a really good offseason right now. So I'm excited for those guys.
You know, Derek, it's as much as it's going to be about you, it's also about the rest of the offense.
Yeah.
The ability to run the ball is going to be critical here. Everybody knows the front end of the schedule. It's loaded.
Yep.
I mean, you start with the national champs, then you get Appalachian State, who's going to be one of the favorites in the Sun Belt, then you get Michigan State. Take me through what you learned about the run game last year, not just yourself, but the combination of guys you've got and how that gets better.
Yeah. I think we have a really good backfield. So we got three really good backs that all came back last year.
Sure.
And, you know, the experience of the O-line should help us a lot this year. O-line might be the deepest unit on our team. So those guys moving people around and including three good backs, it should be a recipe for success, right? So the running game is very important. It opens up everything. So I think this offseason we kind of focus on that and try to make it better.
Yeah.
Derek, you're not just a guy that, you know, we hear is likable and a leader, but you're someone that I think a lot of people listen to when you talk and when you have opinions on things. We've talked a lot already throughout this show today about NIL. Yeah. And how it changes the landscape, not just of college football, but of college athletics. What has that process been like for you? And I know you have already done some big things with it.
Yeah, I think it's been good. You know, being a college athlete, like a lot of people don't, you know, get the business side of it until like later in life. And yeah. I think just, you know, combining the two, being a college athlete and also learning about business, and, you know, I'm trying to help as many people as possible. Hmm. So, like, my big thing is to try to help as many teammates as I can, like, get the O-line, you know, commercials, get the, you know, it could be the third string deep snapper, get him something. Like, so a lot of us on the same team, we're all working together and trying to help everybody out. So that's one thing we learned from NIL.
What kind of commercials do we want to see the O-line in? have we yeah. picked out a topic for that yet?
Yeah, so I think we have one coming pretty soon, actually.
So, oh, okay. A little teaser yeah. there. Okay.
Kyle Thompson, the company that I signed with, the first one. I think we're going to do a commercial with O-line.
I love it.
Yeah. trying to get everybody.
But see, this is all the stuff that was fantasy land.
Yeah.
I mean, you started playing football in 2016 in Houston.
Yeah, long time.
I mean, no offense, you're a little bit of the gray beard now.
For sure. I'm old.
Okay?
I'm old. Yeah.
But now to have this avenue, not just the avenue from a financial perspective, but the avenue from a voice perspective.
Yeah.
I mean, we've already heard about, you know, a couple of coaches in the ACC saying, hey, look, our team's not really sure about 12-team playoff.
Yeah.
Is there a degree of responsibility for a guy like you who's seen it, you know, for a while, to understand the power of your voice right now as it relates to not just today's college football, but the future of it?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think guys like myself and other guys around the country should use our voice in a positive way. And if we can use our voice to help, you know, the future college athletes, future college football team,
sure.
and players, I think it's a good deal. So that's why, you know, I try to use mine in the most positive way I can and just help everybody out.
Important thing to remember about King is that Miami went 500 or more yards of total offense in three of their last five games, including 620 in that 85-point game with NC State, 44-41, the final in Raleigh that night. So they had 620 that night on 83 plays. They had 500 in the win, 524 in the win against Duke. They also had 512 in the bowl game on 78 plays against Oklahoma State. Now with Charleston Rambo joining Mike Harley, Will Mallory, all the other guys that come back, 10 starters back, including that offensive line we spoke of. Goodness heavens. You can see if you start diving into numbers how people like Miami. And they like Carolina too, but they really like Miami. And the momentum with King last week, looking healthy, talking well about being back at 100% for opening day against Miami is also something else.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
3rd and 21 from the end zone. Hooker. The ball came out. Virginia has it. They waited 15 years for this.
Hot streak is over.
Well, the Cavaliers snapped that streak of the Commonwealth Cup in 2019, and a year ago the Hokies were able to take it back, but nonetheless, the lines have kind of been drawn again in the Virginia-Virginia Tech rivalry, and we welcome you back to Packer and Durham as we get to the halfway point on this Friday and our football deep dive, if you will. It's interesting because Virginia, the Bryce Perkins thing was such a landmark move for that program, right? And then kind of a year in between, and now Brennan Armstrong has really taken the reins of that program, one of just six quarterbacks last year in FBS to throw for 200 yards a game and run for 60 or more in a game, and the only guy in the ACC to do it, surprisingly. So there is some expectation, And Bronco Mendenhall is has been one of those guys that has really, really been about kind of where this is all going, right? And I think that's one of the exciting things about where this is now for what Virginia has. And you can tell by talking to Mendenhall, he's pretty excited about the season.
I certainly believe that results follow leadership, and I put tons of effort and intention on our protocols and our team safety, not so much on football. And as I realized, wait, once we start to play, score is kept and the same standards are expected.
Yeah.
And so it was leadership by me, program design, that actually allowed the team to start recovering. And then along the way, as we learned more about Brennan and gave him more opportunities, that happened to coincide with an increased emphasis on not only staying safe, but playing football. And to his credit, everything that we asked, he not only does it really well and exceeds expectations. But we kind of thought that before, and there's very little drop-off in terms of points and yards from him and Bryce Perkins, which I think surprised a lot of people.
Coach, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's exactly where I wanted to go. The offense still looks the same, and they're different in the fact that he's not going to blow you away with his speed, but he's a very good runner. So how pleased have you been to not only see that and probably come to expect it?
So we expected it by knowing who Brennan was. I think the biggest difference is you don't get the dynamic runs of 80, but you get the 12 make someone miss in a first down at 15. And you get that consistently with a really fierce competitive mindset and a very good arm. So lots of benefit. We expected it. We knew it. Now everyone else knows it. And there's nothing other than progress, and we've already seen that through spring, so we're excited.
One of the issues that you would have to highlight when talking about the negative with Brennan would be the turnovers, and I know that drives any coach crazy. Coach, one thing I've learned about you from afar is you like to be connected, understand your guys, culture you lead with, philosophy. A lot of the turnover battle is mental. So how do you work on that going into the season?
Yeah, it really is awareness, right? So with everything that we tackle, right, there's an educational part, there's a dialogue part, there's a contemplation part, and then there's an action part. And if you move right to the action, you don't really get the depth of understanding and the sticking power of what the other parts are. And so Brennan clearly understands now everything he does matters at quarterback. Holding onto the ball is certainly paramount, and whoever has the ball most usually scores the most points, and there's one position that's disproportionately valuable, and that's his. And so just simply understanding that at a deeper level and knowing that, wait, everything I do with the ball matters. But that doesn't mean, right, that you coach the level of, wait, I can't do anything with it and I'm too conservative. And so Brennan is aggressive, he's tough, he's competitive, and we want every chance taken that he can take as long as he understands the risk and frames it that quickly, right, that's worth it. And he's much clearer now than what he was.
Brennan is obviously going to be a huge part of this offense, but the creativity that Coach Anai has and the way that you put athletes on the field in a multitude of positions, one of them being here today and Keaton Thompson, I guess talk to us about that philosophy. Does it drive you crazy as a defensive guy that you're looking at so many different pieces, have to say, okay, we have a quarterback out at wide receiver, what he can do, and maybe just how that came about?
Yeah, so mostly as a defensive-oriented coach, personnel groups, and you'll see defenses hold up personnel trying to identify what the offense has. That usually leads to the type of plays that are being defended out of that personnel group. But from an old-time warrior culture perspective, what people have found is it's hard to fight something you can't name. And so what if you can't name what personnel group it is? What if you can't name the style of offense it is? Then how do you prepare for that? So that comes to simply a business principle of maximizing resources. And so we look at our team, how many good players do we have? At what positions do they play? What if they can play multiple positions? How do we put the best 11 out there at any one time? And what's to say a quarterback or three quarterbacks can't be on the field at the same time if they're our best athletes for that specific play? So we really don't embrace the idea of any limits. We like innovation, and that maximizes our potential to be consistent and to win.
Coach, when you talk about an upcoming season, naturally new faces become a big part of the conversation, whether it be via transfers, some new guys coming in as freshmen. You're smiling a little bit. I feel like you've got some impact transfers that can make a difference. Any names that you'd like to share with us to look out for?
You know, I think philosophically I'll lead first with there's no reason to add, and I prefer grad transfers, but there's no reason to add grad transfers, which to me epitomize college football, that they've done their academic work and now they're looking for something more to increase and improve where they currently are. I love the idea then of, okay, how can we add value and how can they add value? And I normally talk to them about we both have to be right here. So when a grad transfer comes, and we have some, they're filling a need that we have, but they're also believing that they can be more than what they have been by joining us. And if that doesn't work out, it really was a poor decision. But when it does, and we've had a pretty strong track record already in building our program at UVA with grad transfers, I've really found value in that, and I love being able to provide opportunities. So we have a tight end in Jelani Woods that's come to us. I think he'll be an exceptional player. We have defensive backs that have joined us at corner that I think have a great chance to help us. And it's fun for me to provide opportunity and then to see value immediately added and to see the reward and the well-being of a young person when they have an opportunity. So, yeah, this year will be no different. We have some coming. That's really as far as I'll go.
Yeah. I know you were very professional in your approach last season, but it had to be incredibly taxing trying to operate at a high level, which you're accustomed to there in Virginia, in the midst of the height of COVID. What was that like last season as you prepare yourself for hopefully a different season this year?
So President Ryan talked with all of our head coaches at UVA, and he asked about our takeaways and give him one positive and one negative. And I gave him the same answer for both, and that was clarity. So clarity for me was what value does football really have? And now put it in the pandemic, what value did it add, if any? And then how could I justify playing the game when there was risk or coaching the team? And so that clarity helped me define more of what my purpose is. And I love to develop young people through football. What I learned is being 5-5 is not what I'm accustomed to. I like championship football. Sure. And so it's helped in terms of clarity. What I shared with our president is I love developing young people through championship football. That's the purpose part and the development part with the results part. And what I found about myself is I want both. And I'm not okay personally if I don't have both, which I hadn't come face to face with that for a while. But I think it's desirable to have amazing purpose and also have the results to show for it.
You know, Virginia's schedule is interesting. Cavaliers open with William & Mary. That's a game you can see here on ACC Network as well. 3 of 4 games at home to start the year, including a week 2 ball game against Illinois. And the only reason I bring that up is because seemingly Syracuse and Virginia are going to play Big Ten teams in week 2. And we've talked about NC State at Mississippi State, Pittsburgh at Tennessee, or ACC-SEC matchups in week 2. But kind of the way you build a season, the way Bronco Mendenhall sometimes talks about building a season, you get the sense that that game against Illinois is going to be an early test as to kind of where Virginia thinks they are. Even though Brett Bielema is the new coach at Illinois and they're rebuilding and all those type things, you still get the sense that that game's kind of a building block for him, because then they go to Carolina the next weekend, then they turn around and 6 days later get Wake Forest on the ACC schedule. Before, by the way, another 6-day turnaround to play Miami in South Florida on a Thursday night. Justin Fuente will not have to wait to week 2 to get the big game. He's got a big game in week 1. Everybody knows. Shoulder to shoulder, Friday night, September 3rd on ESPN, 6 o'clock start with the Hokies and the Tar Heels at Lane Stadium. And the guys started their questioning at the kickoff with Foo about, quite frankly, does having that big ball game make your preseason prep easier?
I think it helps in our preparation. There's another level of urgency that comes with that, knowing what it is coming out of the gate. And you get a chance to compare your preparation model. And knowing that you're going to be tested right out of the gate, you don't get to dip your toe in the water. You got to hit the ground running in the first week of the season.
Coach David Hale, an ESPN colleague of ours, also a writer, ranked every position group in the ACC from 1 to 14. When he got to wide receivers and targets, he ranked your group as number 1 in the conference in terms of receiving core. I imagine you agree with him. Can you tell me why?
Well, we've got a lot of guys coming back. I mean, we've got some experience. And we have a really versatile tight end that I don't know if he was included in that ranking.
He was.
He's as good as they come.
That's right.
And, what we've tried to do is we've got to get our chemistry down. I kind of giggled with the guys a minute ago, because heading into this summer, which is more player-led, that was the word between the quarterbacks, mainly Braxton, and the wideouts. We got to get some chemistry. We got to get our chemistry down. We got to be able to throw the ball on time in great locations. We got to understand body language and leverage and those sorts of things. And the first couple questions for those guys up there was about chemistry, which I thought was pretty cool. We all kind of snickered. But
did you set that up that way, Coach?
No, yeah, I didn't. Right. I didn't have anything to do with it.
You slip in 20s,
yeah,
everybody.
I didn't have anything to do with it. But I'm really excited about the experience we've got back. And we've got some good young guys, too, that we don't have to force into playing. Mm-hmm. You know, I think sometimes young players fall into that trap where they are good players, but they're forced into playing before they're ready. And we've got a chance to play with some guys that I think have some real talent, some guys that haven't played much but have been in the program. Jaden Payette's been in the program for now 3 years and hasn't played yet. Mm-hmm. Some guys that maybe people don't know that I'm excited to put out there.
Yeah, you talk about big stone gap, James Mitchell, and just how effective he can be, the things that he can do for your team. It's been very special, fun, as a former tight end turned offensive lineman with wishes I could go on a jet sweep. Let's talk about the guy throwing him the ball and the consistency that you need to have at that position. What can we expect to see from Braxton now going into year two as a starter, with your program? What kind of things has he been working on to get better?
Well, I feel really good about Braxton's ability to throw the football. Mm-hmm. I really do. His understanding of defenses, his ability to push the ball down the field. I felt as good about that as I have since I've been here. At Virginia Tech in terms of our ability to throw the ball. We've got it. That doesn't mean we're just going to throw it 60 times a game, but if we can run the ball and be efficient, I think it's going to lead us to having opportunities to push the ball down the field in an efficient manner, and that's what's got me pretty excited.
Coach, you're in the Grant Ballroom here at the Westin in Charlotte. We heard you several times there say you cannot create an identity without a foundation. You alluded to that here talking with me and Eric McLean. Take me through what that foundation looks like that ultimately gets you to what identity that you foresee for this program this year.
Well, I mean, we were well on our way, and we are well on our way to having an understanding of what it takes to play at a high level each week. That's the difficult part. Anybody can get up for one game. It's mm-hmm. it's being able to create that level of intensity and urgency week to week, and also being talented enough to carry you through some of those downturns. But we make no bones about it. We're about rolling our sleeves up and getting to work. You know, from the lunch pail to the hard hat to hard, smart, and tough to what we're about. But those are just words if you don't embrace that part of it. And what I've seen from our football team is a willingness to embrace, what it's going to take to give ourselves a chance to have a special season.
We've gone several minutes here without mentioning name, image, and likeness, Coach. And it plays such a big role in your job now and a hat that you have to wear as you engage with your athletes. How is that showing face? I also heard you say something interesting that it can be a detriment. It can be a pitfall potentially. Can you elaborate on some of that for us?
Well, I think there's very few people that say that it's all good or all bad. If you really look at it, if you really live in the life and trying to figure it out, there's a lot of things of it that I think are really positive, but I think it's a cautionary tale. I think we got to be careful with our young people. I was really proud of James Mitchell's answer. James Mitchell's focused on football and graduation right now, and I want to make sure we're not just grabbing the short-term game, but we've got our eyes on the long-term game of what we're here for, which is get an education and train and play football along the way. And if we're good enough to go on to play in the NFL, that's wonderful. But this never leaves you, okay? Endorsing a product and getting a little bit of money is one thing, but your education never leaves you. And I don't want us to lose sight as coaches, as players on the long-term game. But along the way, we can still have some fun and do some good things. And we're uniquely positioned. I love how we're positioned. 250,000 alumni. We are, the number one sports brand in the state of Virginia. We have a real opportunity for our alumni, for private businesses to reach out and help our kids in a legal way now.
Interesting thoughts last week in Charlotte when you heard the coaches talk about name, image, and likeness. And that's one of the things we'll kind of get into at 9:30 with Matt Brown is the different layers of this, because it's clear that there's some inconsistencies. And how important will it be to have some sort of, for lack of a better term, galvanizing law to bring it all kind of back into play for everybody to compete? But Justin Fuente, pretty straight about it. And he was one of many coaches who was pretty candid with our kickoff coverage about name, image, and likeness. And he's got a pretty good football team, too. He likes James Mitchell, you can tell. And who wouldn't, right? I mean, the guy is unbelievable at tight end.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
He's going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the ACC next year.
I think he's the most underrated quarterback in the country.
You know, I'm excited to come back one more year and try and win a championship here.
Pickens spins out of it. Pass receiver open to the end zone and a touchdown.
Now Pickens trying to get to the corner himself.
Back for the pylon and the Panthers score a touchdown.
Him being back is going to be huge.
Well, when you talk about Kenny Pickett at Pittsburgh, you're talking about potentially, by the records, one of the greatest quarterbacks in Pitt history. And that was, I think, part of the thinking, a very intentional conversation that Kenny had with Mark Whipple last spring, probably when he was going through the decision-making process. You see, he's fifth all-time in yards, third in total offense, tied for third in 300-yard games, and even second in rushing touchdowns, and too shy of breaking the mark there. Pat Narduzzi said his quarterback was the most underrated guy in college football a year ago. We caught up with Kenny to see what's made the biggest difference in his game. And here's Katie George.
Without attention to detail, you'll miss a lot of little things that turn into big things pretty quickly.
How about a shot here? He's got it! Touchdown!
If a guy's technique, if his eyes are on the receiver.
Perfect throw.
If his eyes are in the backfield.
Nice for the pylon!
He's inside technique, outside technique, that changes everything in a certain play.
And the Panthers score a touchdown!
Touchdown! Are you kidding me?
Being able to pick up on those small keys and take advantage of what the defense has given me has, you know, improved my game.
Pitt quarterback Kenny Pickett had only 3 scholarship offers from Power 5 schools before signing with the Panthers in 2017. 1 year later, he earned the starting role and has made a name for himself in the ACC. Not because of the moments you see on the field, but in the moments when nobody is watching.
Kenny's a worker. Kenny worked all summer. When Kenny goes home to see his family, he goes and works out again. He goes, you know, to the training center. He goes to see his quarterback trainer that he has back home. He's working all the time. All he cares about is football.
I've known Kenny since he's been like 6-7 years old. He's a hard worker. He's a class act. He's a driven kid. He's everything you want in a quarterback.
Tony Rossiopi is a personal QB coach and an instructor at the Manning Passing Academy. Created and run by the first family of quarterbacks, Archie, Cooper, Peyton, and Eli.
I haven't put many guys up to nominate to work the camp from a college standpoint, and he was the first kid that I brought to Archie Manning. You know, I just said, listen, we got to get this kid to camp.
I ended up getting a text from Archie Manning, you know, that I was invited to the Manning Passing Academy, and it was, you know, unbelievable getting a text first off from Archie Manning, who's a legend in the game, coming from a legendary family. So I just called him immediately and, you know, told him I'll definitely be there, and, you know, I was just looking forward and grateful for the opportunity.
Hey, let's go. All right, what are y'all doing talking to me? Go get me your coach.
I think it's a chance for all the kids to come in and throw with the best.
It'll probably take about 6 steps.
You know, in the 8 years I've been here, we've had the number one pick there almost every year. We've had, you know, we've had the who's who of college football. And then the second thing, it's you're just around Eli and Peyton.
Right, and you're scrambling.
Having a chance to talk, you know, not only with Peyton and Eli, but other quarterbacks and getting their opinions on certain things and trying to take a piece of everyone's game from that experience and just mold it into my own. The classroom session with Eli and Peyton is probably the most important hour that we all had there. You don't want to miss any second of it. You want to make sure that you know, you're soaking everything in that they're saying. Kind of a hectic hour and you just didn't want to miss. I think I had like 6 pages of notes by the time I was ended up being finished there. I didn't kind of pick my head up. I was just writing down to make sure I didn't miss anything.
Those notes have become a lasting guidebook for Pickett. Last season, he ranked 3rd in the ACC in passing yards per game, behind only Trevor Lawrence and Sam Howell.
The biggest thing is how to prepare throughout the week, so it's really Monday to Friday was where it helped me the most, and then obviously that just improved my level of play on the field because, you know, if you're not prepared, you're not going to go out there and play well. So learning how to break teams down through film and having a proper schedule of how to go about that throughout a work week and a game week was the biggest thing that I took away.
I've seen a lot of great quarterbacks in my years. He is up there with all of them. There's no doubt about, you know, what he can do on the field. Kenny's an NFL football player, period.
Only one guy on the roster for Pittsburgh who caught more than 20 balls is gone. And that was DJ Turner, who caught 44 balls. He was second behind Jordan Addison a year ago in receptions for Pittsburgh. So Kenny Pickett has the benefit this fall of having just about everybody back in the receiving game and a healthy Lucas Kroll at tight end, which should be a boon as well for Pittsburgh offensively and for Pickett.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.